Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the CAE fourth quarter conference call. Please be advised that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Andrew Arnovitz, Vice President, Investor Relations and Strategy. You may now proceed, Mr. Arnovitz.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. And before we begin, I need to read the following. Certain statements made during this conference, including but not limited to statements that are not historical facts, are forward-looking and are subject to important risks, uncertainties, and assumptions. These include statements about our activities, events, and developments that we expect to or anticipate may incur in the future, including, for example, statements about our vision, strategies, market trends and outlook, future revenues, capital spending, expansions and new initiatives, financial obligations, and expected sales. By their nature, forward-looking statements require us to make assumptions that are subject to inherent risks and uncertainties associated with our business, which may cause actual results in future periods to differ materially from results indicated in forward-looking statements. While these statements are based on management's expectations and assumptions regarding historical trends, current conditions, and expected future developments, as well as other factors that we believe are reasonable and appropriate in the circumstances, listeners are cautioned not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements, as there is a risk that they may not be accurate. Except as required by law, we disclaim any intention or obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. The forward-looking information and statements contained in this presentation are expressly qualified by this cautionary statement. You'll find more information about the risks and uncertainties associated with our business in our fourth quarter fiscal 2015 MD&A and in our annual information form for the year ended March 31, 2014. These documents have been filed with the Canadian Securities Commissions and are available on our website at CAE.com and on SEDAR. They've also been filed with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission under Form 40F and are available on EDGAR. Forward-looking statements in this conference represent our expectations as of today, May 26, 2015, and accordingly are subject to change after this date. On the call with me this afternoon are Marc Parent, CAE's President and Chief Executive Officer, and Stéphane Lefebvre, our Chief Financial Officer. After comments from Marc and Stéphane, we will take questions from financial analysts and institutional investors. Following the conclusion of that Q&A period, we will open the call to questions from members of the media. Let me now turn the call over to Marc.
Thank you, Andrew, and good afternoon to everyone joining us on the call. As per custom, I'll first review some of the highlights of the quarter as well as the fiscal year, and then Stéphane will provide a more detailed summary of our financial results. I'll then come back at the end of the call to discuss our outlook for the year ahead. We met most of our strategic and financial objectives, and overall, I'm pleased with our fourth quarter and fiscal year 2015 performance. I'm especially pleased with the progress we've made to secure strategic training opportunities in each of our businesses. New joint ventures with Japan Airlines and China Eastern Airlines, the startup of our Defense and Security Training Center in Brunei, and comprehensive solutions deals in healthcare are all good examples that underscore the vision of the company to be the recognized global training partner of choice. For the quarter and for the year as a whole, we generated record revenues with higher operating profits, and we reached a new record backlog. In civil, we met our goal for double-digit revenue growth and a higher margin for the year, but we didn't reach the higher peak margin in the fourth quarter as we expected. The slower ramp-up in peak margin was largely because of lower-than-expected simulator utilization in the last 2 months of the quarter in Europe and in South America, where we thought markets were on track to pick up more quickly than they actually did. On the order front in civil, we signed long-term training services agreements in the quarter with airlines and operators in the Americas, Asia-Pacific, and Europe, and we received 10 full-flight simulator orders from customers including Southwest Airlines, WestJet Encore, and China Airlines, bringing to 41 the total number of full-flight simulator sales. In all, we received approximately $398 million in civil orders this quarter for a book-to-sales ratio of 1.08 times, and for the last 12 months, it was 1.17 times, a value which underscores our leading position in the market. Civil backlog for the quarter was up significantly to $2.9 billion and now includes our share of the recently operationalized joint venture with Japan Airlines. In defense, we expect it to be resilient, and we're proud to have, in fact, delivered top and bottom line growth in a down defense market. We signed defense contracts during the quarter across a broad range of geographies and platforms, including the provision of a C-130J weapon systems trainer for the U.S. Air Force, M-346 simulators for the Italian Air Force, AW-101 helicopter training devices for the Royal Navy, an AW-139 helicopter simulator for Australia's Toll Group, and P-8 simulators for the Royal Australian Air Force. In addition to selling new simulators, our defense customers continue to enhance and upgrade legacy training systems as they transition to more virtual training. We signed a range of upgrade contracts, including a major visual system upgrade on the Royal Canadian Air Force's CH-146 helicopter simulator. In total, we won approximately $238 million in defense orders this quarter for a book-to-sales ratio of 1.01 times. The book-to-sales ratio for the last 12 months was 0.88 times, and our fourth quarter defense backlog was $2.5 billion. Finally, in healthcare, our strategy continues to bear fruit with strong revenue and operating income growth, further reaffirming our conviction in the potential for simulation-based training solutions in healthcare. We gained more traction during the quarter with our solutions approach, new products, and enhanced global reach. We booked some larger training deals involving a broad range of our patient, surgical, and ultrasound simulators, our simulation center management solutions, as well as our training and support services. In the United States, we sold patient simulators, simulation center management solutions, and curriculum to customers including Southeastern University. And we sold our patient simulators and a range of other products, including ultrasound simulators, to customers in Southeast Asia, Eastern Europe, and Africa. We also continue to find synergies with defense this quarter, with patient simulators ordered for the Australian Defense Forces. With that, I'll now turn the call over to Stefan.
Well, thank you, Mark, and good afternoon, everyone. Consolidated revenue for the quarter was up 10% over Q4 last year, at $632 million, and quarterly operating profit was up 22% to $105 million. This gave us an operating margin of 16.7%, which is 160 basis points better than the same period last year. Fourth quarter net income attributable to equity holders from continuing operations was $63 million, or 24 cents per share. I would note that the effective tax rate in Q4 this year was 23% compared to only 15% last year. For the fiscal year, revenue increased 8% to $2.2 billion and operating profit grew 15% to $333 million. The operating profit margin for the year expanded 90 basis points to 14.8%. Annual net income attributable to equity holders from continuing operations was $201 million, or 76 cents per share, and the effective tax rate for the year was 22% compared to only 13% last year. We had $142 million of free cash flow in the fourth quarter, up from $108 million in the fourth quarter last year. And for the year, net cash provided by continuing operating activities after deducting net cash used in investing activities, which takes into account all of our CapEx, was $90 million, up 9% from the prior year. We continue to execute on our three capital priorities, namely targeted growth investments, higher current returns for shareholders, and deleveraging our balance sheet. Total capital expenditures were $41 million for the quarter and $144 million for the year. Growth capital expenditures represented two-thirds of the annual total and maintenance the remainder. Annual capital expenditures were 8% lower than the $157 million the year prior, and given the investments we've already made to position the business, we expect total capital expenditures to be substantially lower again in fiscal 2016 at approximately $100 million. Despite a significant translation increase from a lower Canadian dollar, net debt decreased to $950 million as at March 31, 2015, compared to $972 million as at December 31, 2014. Over the course of the fiscal year, higher cash flow from operations and lower capital expenditures enabled us to further strengthen our balance sheet, and so our net debt to total capital ratio was 36.3% as of March 31st. Now looking at our segmented financial performance. In civil, fourth quarter revenue was $368 million, up 14% compared to the prior year period, and fourth quarter operating income was $62 million for a margin of 16.8%. We had a gain on the disposal of some assets in the quarter, which was offset by some negative FX impacts, largely driven by a sharp drop in the Brazilian real in the last 2 months of the quarter and some other non-recurring expenses. Annual civil revenue was $1.3 billion, up 10% compared to prior year, while operating income was up 17% to $211 million, giving us an operating margin of 16.3%. Training center utilization was 70% for the quarter and 68% for the year. In defense, revenue for the fourth quarter was $235 million, up 2% compared to last year. Fourth quarter operating income was $40 million for an operating margin of 16.8%. Annual revenue was $857 million, up 4% from the prior year, and annual operating income was $116 million for an operating margin of 13.5%. In healthcare, revenue for the quarter was $29 million, up 34% compared to the same quarter last year. Similar to the recent second quarter when we saw the positive impact of higher volume of the healthcare margin, the fourth quarter also demonstrated the potential for margin expansion once we get above the roughly $25 million quarterly revenue. Fourth quarter operating income was up nearly sixfold compared to last year at $4.1 million, giving us a 14% margin. Annual revenue was $94 million, up 19%, and annual operating income was up fourfold to $6.7 million for a 7.1% operating margin. So with that, I will turn the call back over to Mark, who will discuss the way forward.
Thanks, Stéphane. As this is our year-end call, and because we recently completed our annual strategic review with CAE's Board of Directors, I'll talk about the year ahead, as well as provide some comments about our strategic orientations. As we look to fiscal 2016 and beyond, we remain encouraged by our prospects for growth, especially in training. Last year, we continued to demonstrate how the unique combination of CAE's comprehensive training solutions, global presence, and know-how in training makes CAE the ideal training partner of choice in all three of our markets. And we see much more opportunity ahead for CAE to grow its position in the global training market. We've made significant investments in recent years to build out the world's largest and broadest network of civil aviation training centers, and our priorities are squarely focused on filling training center capacity and driving returns on those investments. At the same time, we'll continue to selectively fund growth by investing with our partners in lockstep with their prospective demand, and we'll continue to invest to support our business aviation customers. We've already funded the majority of our growth investments, which is the principal reason why we're able to substantially reduce total CapEx plans for fiscal 2016 to approximately $100 million. We'll also continue to strengthen our position by developing new solutions like our 7000 series full flight simulator and innovative processes to become even more competitive and offer an even more compelling alternative to our customers. Long-term civil aviation market fundamentals remain strong, notwithstanding the near-term softness in Europe and South America. IATA predicts approximately 5% continued passenger traffic growth, and we believe this is the overarching market driver for our solutions. Whatever the rate of actual passenger growth, there's no doubt the skies are becoming more crowded and safety remains paramount. And with nearly seven decades behind us, the highest share of annual simulator sales and the largest customer install base, CAE's brand in safety is well recognized the world over. It's fair to say we're the go-to provider for flight simulators, and this is a position that we intend to protect by creating an even wider gap between the competition and CAE. We expect to see demand for about the same number of civil simulators in fiscal 2016 as we did in fiscal 2015. We've transformed the company over a long period of time to become a globally recognized leader in training solutions because we believe this is where we can add the most value and it represents a very large market. The total global civil aviation training market is nearly six times larger than the products market, and this is where we believe we can make major strides to grow our business over the long term and fill our available capacity. We'll continue to lead in the sale of simulators, and at the same time, we'll grow our share in training. For the fiscal year ahead, we expect to make more progress on this front with our training solutions, and we expect to see annual civil margins continue to expand from the 16.3% level reached this fiscal year. In defense, we proved that we can grow in a down defense market, and we continue to expect modest revenue growth with operating margins in the 12 to 13% range. The rate of defense procurement is still challenging to forecast, but we maintain a positive outlook based on a number of factors. Our current submitted and pending proposals are in excess of $2.5 billion, which is a near all-time high for the company, and our enhanced capabilities in integrated live, virtual, and constructive training systems opens up an even larger market potential for us longer term. We see growth opportunities for CAE as defense forces transition from their legacy training systems to more virtual training. And we're also well positioned on enduring platforms with good geographic diversity. And also giving us confidence is our solid $2.5 billion of backlog and the increasing proportion of our revenue coming from long-term recurring training and support services contracts. And finally, in healthcare, we draw on CAE strengths of unique comprehensive solutions and global presence. We've gained more of a critical mass in fiscal 2015, and we expect to build on this base in the year ahead. Our long-term aspiration for healthcare is to be a leader in an increasingly regulated market for simulation-based training. We think we have an excellent position, and we continue to make inroads with medical device OEMs and medical societies to adopt the use of simulation in a course of training, assessing, and certifying practitioners. We have good momentum in healthcare, and we expect to see continued top and bottom line growth in the year ahead. To summarize, we look forward to increased success in fiscal year 2016. We'll continue to invest to protect our leadership position in simulation products, and we're especially encouraged by the long-term potential for CAE as a leader in training solutions. We expect growth in all segments for the year, with performance continuing to follow CAE's usual pattern, involving a stronger second half of the fiscal year than the first. We've put a lot of capital to work in recent years, and we're clearly positioned to fill capacity and harvest investment returns. We expect that our continued profit growth, together with substantially lower capital expenditures next year, will yield higher returns on capital. And looking beyond, we believe our performance will continue to improve over the longer term as we bring our training partner of choice vision to fruition. Thank you for your attention, and we're now ready to answer your questions. Andrew?
Operator, we'll now open the lines to take questions from investors.
Thank you. We'll now proceed with our first Q&A session for investors. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, you may press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been asked by another and you would like to withdraw your registration, you may press the 1 followed by the 3. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. And our first question comes from the line of Fadi Chamoun with BMO Capital Markets. Please proceed.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, everyone. I wanted to just sort of drill a little bit on the SIM margin or on the civil aviation margin outlook. So I'm thinking your throughput in simulator manufacturing probably going to be flat or slightly down as you sort of reduce some of these investments in your internal network and orders are more or less flat. But on the other hand, you probably have improvement in utilization. So how should we think about the margin progression? I know you're saying it should improve year on year, but can you put some number around that?
Well, I think history tells us to be careful about that, Fatty. But I think that we're clearly confident that it's going to be higher, and it's really going to come across from increase in training center utilization, filling our available capacity across commercial and business aircraft simulators in the network. At the same time, we've had sustained high book-to-bills in the last couple of years, so we are seeing more activity, and then you have more activity as well on the military side, so there's more throughput going across the plant, so you do have more overhead absorption and factors like that that increase your profitability or your gross margin of programs going through the plant. At the same time, we do take some we temper our expectations with some anticipation of continued competitive pressure, which just remains intense on the product side, and we're defending our market share against very aggressive competitors. So all in all with that, we're confident that the margins are going to increase, and again, those are the factors which guide our expectations, but clearly it's in the rising direction.
Okay. On the CapEx, I mean, it's a pretty sort of, I guess, good outlook we're looking at now. But I'm wondering, how should we think about sustainable CapEx? I guess we're going to see maybe a period here where you're growing into your network utilization rate. But how should we think about sort of maintenance CapEx or sort of not maintenance CapEx, I guess, CapEx in the context of 5% global traffic growth? If you're growing more or less in line with global traffic, what should be sort of the run rate for CapEx?
Well, I think we'll go back to the comments we were saying, Fatty. We've already, as you well know, we've invested in creating the largest and most diversified geographically network of simulators in the world. So we've spent a lot of money to create that network. We're getting the contracts. We have the contracts. So we're in the mode of filling capacity. When we look at where we are in the world, we think we're pretty happy with the training centers that we have, with the simulators we have in the network. And as we've said previously, where we're focused now in terms of adding incremental CapEx, which is mainly simulators in our network, is focused on a couple areas. One is business aircraft, and we think that there's remaining capacity growth in the business aircraft, and yields are good in business aircraft. The other area we want to add simulators is, as I say in my remarks, to grow in lockstep with our joint venture partners and those companies that we have associations with. For example, we have a joint venture with Indigo Airlines in Delhi. They're one of the fastest growing airlines in the world, Air Asia, for example. Other airlines throughout the world are growing at a very fast rate. So China Southern is another one in Zhuhai. So as they are taking on aircraft, we clearly are going to add simulators to those training centers, those joint venture training centers, to match capacity. But when we look, having said all that, when we look at our CapEx requirements to continue to be able to serve those two particular markets which I talked about, we're quite comfortable that between growth and maintenance CapEx, $100 million is what we need to spend. Now, as I've always said, that would not include, say, if we were able to convince a large airline to outsource a complete training solution to us, where we decide to buy simulators, their simulator park. Now, that would be more of an M&A deal, and we've always said that. But we don't. To the longer extent to your question, we don't give guidance beyond this year. But we've clearly said that, you know, we're going to be less capital intensive over the next few years. And as you see the $100 million, that's what you're seeing. We've pre-funded a lot of the growth that we're seeing, and I would expect that to continue. So I wouldn't want to go out many years here, obviously, because, you know, who knows what the markets and the world will bring. But based on the outlook of continued growth in civil aviation that we see, 4 to 5% overall every year, I think the kind of outlook that we have is one that probably lasts more than a year, although I'm not going out too much more than a year.
Okay, I appreciate the call. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes to the line of Cameron Dirksen with National Bank Financial. Please proceed.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Cameron.
Question for me is on return on capital employed. I mean, for the full year, 10.4%. You know, I'm sure you're not satisfied with that level. The reduced CapEx is a good step in the right direction to helping that number. But I'm wondering if you can maybe just talk about what targets you might have for that metric, and maybe to ask it another way. What do you think is kind of the minimum level that you'd be considered to be, you know, acceptable?
Well, Cameron, this is Stéphane. You look at with the level of investment that we've made in the past 2-3 years, and for sure it diluted the return on capital employed, the acquisition of Oxford, the deployment of assets that we've made. And I think I've said a few times, the good news is that it was done at a time when our cost of fund went down as well, so we were able to preserve quite a good yield over and above our cost of fund and above our WAC. I think you see from our CapEx guidance, I think we reached a point where we've by and large invested a lot of money in that network, and that will pace down the investment over the next, at least the next year, as we said. So clearly, I mean, it'll improve our return on capital employed. So are we pleased with the level of capital and return on ROCE that we currently have? Well, we know it has to go up, and it will. So we're confident in improving our profit. We're confident in reducing our cap, investing less than we've had in the past.
We've said maybe a few times that for, you know, in terms of a longer-term horizon, we'd like to, the business over the strategic plan period, we'd like very much to reach a mid-teen type of a ROCE. And that's what we, we've had in the back of our mind in building our strategic plan over the foreseeable future 3 to 5 years.
Okay, that's very helpful. Maybe just a quick housekeeping item. I'm just wondering if you can talk about when the acquisition of the Bombardier military training business is going to close.
Well, it's hard to predict right now. I mean, we're going through the various levels of approval that we have to. Some of it we don't control, and it's underway. I don't see any showstoppers at all, but it's taking its time, unfortunately. But you know, certainly, I definitely expect it should be the first half of the year for sure. But you know, we're talking about, you know, like I said, a number of approvals that are required. That again, I don't control the timetable.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Benoit Poirier with Desjardins Capital Markets. Please proceed.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. First question, there was a lot of non-recurring items in the quarter. So just on the civil side, I was just wondering whether the partial disposal of a certain interest and investment, we should expect something in going forward in fiscal 16?
Yeah, Benoit, you know, this lots of accounting jargon, but in the end, we've had in Q4, as we've had in many quarters in the past, some gains on disposing some of our assets that were previously deployed in our training center. And from an accounting standpoint, it's treated as a gain on disposal. So that's what they were. But you've seen that in the past. We always have some every quarter. So in Q4, I can use Q4 of last year as a proxy because we looked at the civil margin in Q4 of last year as a target. In Q4 of fiscal 15, we've had about $7.5 million more gains in the civil business than we typically have. On the other hand, I've mentioned in my remarks, we got some one large hit actually that comes from the drop in the Brazilian real in the fourth quarter. We have operations in Brazil, and we're using the USD as functional currency, and the real dropped by 18% from Q3 to Q4. So that's a drastic drop in a short period of time. We've had some cash and receivables in Brazil that was hit by the conversion of the real to the U.S. dollars. And so that accounted for about $4 million of hit in the quarter. And in addition to that, again, always in the civil business, we've had about $3.5 million of what I would call non-recurring expenses. This is mainly, you know, some termination benefits that we've paid out. A little bit of FX leakage in our product business, not that much, but a little bit, and some other provisions write-offs in the quarter. So you look at $7.5 million of upside on one hand, but completely offset by non-recurring costs on the other end.
Okay, this is very good color, Stéphane. And just on the military side, could you quantify the investment tax credits that were claimed in Q4? I know it's seasonal, it's mostly done in Q4, but just want to have an idea of the magnitude.
No, absolutely. So, but in defense, if you go back to the financial statements, you'll find that the company as a whole, we've created about $11 million of ITCs to income on the investment tax credit. Again, if I average out what I would expect in a given quarter, I could have $4, $5, $6 million of ITC normally. That's what I would expect. And so there's been $5 million of additional ITC that we've had in Q4, and this is all in defense. Now, I call them ITCs. They're R&D tax credits, but they're not the typical Canadian ITC. This is coming out of some program in the U.S., And I mean, good news for us is this is a program that we've seen and that will keep on benefiting going forward, not at the same order of magnitude that the, you know, every quarter, but we'll continue to see some of those benefits in the future. The only thing that's peculiar with it is that the associated R&D cost is not all accounted for in the R&D cost line. There's some costs that are part of some of the projects that we deliver to customers that are qualified technology for the purposes of that tax credit claim. And so yes, we've had higher ITCs in the quarter, but we've also had higher R&D expenses. So I can't give you a net impact of it, but it's certainly lower than $5 million.
Okay, very good. And last question before I get back in the queue. On the free cash flow side, obviously it bodes well given the reduced CapEx for this year. So just wondering if you could comment about if there's any a big working capital changes expected this year, and if we should expect any share buyback anytime soon given your strong free cash flow profile.
Look, I think we're pretty pleased with where we landed at least for Q4. I mean, for the whole year, we've had a slow start in terms of cash flow generating in H1, the first half of the year. And but we recovered some of that in Q3 and a lot in Q4. I've said in my remarks, and I think, you know, talking more to people, a lot of people are looking at our cash flow net of all the investment in CapEx that we do. And so I've looked at, for the year, at the cash flow statement. If you look at the cash flow that we've generated from our operations minus all the investments that we've made, the net has actually improved 9% over last year. Now, going forward with expected growth in our business on one hand and lower investment in CapEx, I think we're expecting stronger cash flow next year. We've had some investment in non-cash working cap in fiscal 15, about $70 million. I would expect in fiscal 16 still to have some investment in non-cash working cap, probably not to that level though. But overall, I think we're expecting strong cash flow in fiscal 16.
And to the question, if I can add, Benoit, on the specific topic of share buyback, I'm going to be like a broken record on this one, but I think what I'll say is we'll stay true to our capital allocation priorities that we set up a couple of years ago, which you will recall, and we're going to continue to selectively fund growth, and as we said, that translates itself to about $100 million this year, I mean, that of which is growth CapEx. Then we're going to continue to manage our balance sheet. You know, we'd be deleveraging, and I think that we're a zone that we like, but, you know, we can clearly, and I'll defer to Stefan where it wants to go, but I think we've been happy about the 30-40% range. And the last one is just to the heart of the question you asked is we're going to continue to look at returning cash to shareholders. And so far, you know, we've increased the dividends, you know, for 4 years in a row. So, you know, clearly we have a pattern of doing that, and I never guarantee we'll do it, but clearly, you know, we have an established yield here or you know, in terms of a payout ratio, which, although it's not a policy, I think you can see the trend that we have. We haven't done any buybacks yet, as you well know, but as we've said before, it's not that we're opposed to it. It's something that we look at continuously, and but we don't have a normal course issue right now. Not to say we don't. It's something we'll look at.
Okay, thanks for the time. I'll get back in the queue.
Our next question comes in the line of Kevin Chiang with CIBC World Markets. Please proceed.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Maybe just a point of clarification on your previous remarks there, Mark. In terms of the leverage component to your priorities to cash flow, should I think about that migrating closer to 30% just given the increasing free cash flow, or are you kind of happy with the 36 to 40% you've been hovering around recently?
I better defer to my CFO who's kneeling me there. Hold on.
Look, well, I have to say we're very pleased with where we landed, especially that, you know, after we did the Oxford acquisition, our leverage was around 50%. So with the amount of capital that we've continued deploying in the business, since then. We're pleased with the results and what it does, and it really demonstrates the cash flow that we generate out of the training service business. I've given some sort of guidance that between 35 and 45% would be a very comfortable position to be in. The fact that we are even more deleveraged at 36% gives us flexibility. As Mark said, we have a number of priorities. You've seen that going forward, we expect to invest less than what we did in the past. So it gives us more flexibility to do basically two things: continue deleveraging the balance sheet and return cash to our shareholders. We started having seen more interest on the marketplace for outsourcing deals, either in the civil market or the defense market. There's a number of contracts that we're currently bidding on in defense, and I think that in case we win some of those contracts, they may require some investment, and then we'll have a balance sheet that's strong to capture those opportunities.
That's helpful. And just lastly for me then, your civil trading utilization rates have hit about a glass ceiling in and around the 70% range. I know you expect that utilization to move higher as per your prepared remarks, but can you provide any granularity in terms of what you think the incremental benefits in 2016 could be in terms of what that lift to utilization this year, in terms of what you're expecting? And then can you remind me how you think of normalized utilization rates maybe over the next few years here, given that a lot of your investments in these training centers are now complete?
Well, I think that it's hard to predict where utilization will wind up, and history has proven that, certainly I have been unable to predict it with any degree of certainty for sure, because there's so many circumstances that affect it. What we are clear is, to me there is no glass ceiling. There's no reason at all why the utilization will not increase, and really what fuels that confidence is, like, demand is there. We have a good environment, traffic is continuing to grow, orders are good, we have the contracts in place with the customers in the pipe. We had 2 years in a row of book-to-bills higher than one, not only in products, but also sizable, book-to-bills on the positive side in training. So those contracts are coming forward. We have forecasts with the customers, and when you roll all that up, we definitely come up with a training utilization that's higher than what we see today. So, I see no glass ceiling to this at all. And the fact of the matter is, there's a number of our training centers in the world that are operating about 100%. So, but clearly some are operating on the lower side, which gives you the average that you have. But it really clearly is an average. It's very hard for me to give you an absolute number, except that I'm very confident it'll be higher. And there's a lot of operational leverage associated with that, which is why we're confident in margin progression in civil.
Thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Turan Ketawala with Scotiabank. Please proceed.
Yes, good afternoon. I guess I have a quick follow-up to the same similar type of question here to Kevin's. If you look at the utilization over the last 3 years, it's sort of been in that 69-68% range. And I know there was some relocation that, you guys did last year just to, get things, the capacity sort of more sorted out. So I guess my question is, I know, Mark, you said that they're averaging out with some being higher than others, but what needs to change here? Like, I mean, traffic's been growing globally pretty much. I know some areas are weaker than others, but overall traffic's been growing. So what needs to change here for your utilization to go up?
Well, I think, a couple of factors have really, if I look at this year in particular, I mean, as you look at the previous year, I think you're exactly right. We had a number of things, going on, a lot of movements, less last year than the year before, but still a substantial amount of movement. We've had some this year, but if I look at just the past quarter, I mean, clearly what we saw is that, it's not an exact science. We come up with a forecast based on what we think utilization will be, based on looking at the contract we have in place with customers. that need to train. I mean, if we remember, I mean, this is a regulated business, so customers have to train. Now, there's a degree of flexibility of how far they can push that out. But if I look at what happened specifically in this past quarter, when we looked at it even as early February when we last talked to you, clearly we saw more utilization. What happened specifically because of the specific situation with in Brazil specifically and in Europe, we saw airlines push out the training a few months, and that's what caused the drop in utilization. But again, you can only do that so far. And a lot of it was due to they didn't take the airplanes at the rate that they thought they were going to get them because the economic conditions were not favorable for them to do that. So I think we're talking about factors that delay. It's a delay. It's not that it's gone. It's just delayed because, as you said at the outset, the demand is there. The environment is good. We have the contracts in place. I'm a bit repeating myself now. We have the customers in place. We've established large joint ventures. If I look at, new joint ventures that are going to operationalize, like the one we just did with Japan Airlines, that's going to increase things as well. So that's all the factors that lead me to the confidence that I have.
Okay, perfect. I guess maybe just a quick follow-up there. Is there something you guys can do internally to change that, or sort of is it just more market-dependent then?
Well, we're doing, you would expect us, all the time. I mean, in the end of the day, it's to sell, right? Sell more. Go get more revenue share. I mean, the interesting thing about training, contrary to our products business, if you look at products business, we have about 70% market share. And that market itself is driven by largely the delivery of airplanes out of the major OEMs, specifically Boeing and Airbus. We've talked about these ratio, about every 30 narrow bodies dictates a simulator to market. Every 15 to 20 wide bodies dictates a simulator to market, and we derive about 70% market share. And if you go back in the last few years, that correlation holds pretty well. Again, we have 70% market share in that market. Now, if you look at training, I think the interesting thing in training, that's why I was talking about that in my initial remarks on the call, is this is a market that although we have the largest position in commercial aviation training in the world and the most globally diversified geographically, the reality is we have about 25% market share in a market that's growing itself. So I think that there's two things that will drive us, and that's, and by the way, that market itself is about six times larger, as I mentioned in my remarks, than the actual products market. So for us, what we need to do, and we're actively, you can expect that we're actively pushing to do, is to increase sales, to grow our position in training, i.e. capture market share beyond the 25% that we have. At the same time, convincing airlines and business aircraft operators, big operators, for example, big management companies, in Europe, for example, to partner with us so we can solve their problems in training, i.e. become their training partner of choice. So for us, it's about more wet training, and again, saying 25% market share in a market which is six times larger than the products market. So I think there's room for growth here.
Okay, perfect. That's extremely helpful. Thank you very much. And I guess maybe if I could ask one more on the healthcare side. I know it's small, but you obviously had some really nice incremental margins here in the year. Can you talk a little, do you think that's sort of, you could double again or so in 2016 as well? Is that a reasonable expectation just based on the growth that you see out there?
Well, look, all I'm saying is we're going to grow and, we're going to continue to grow. I know that's not saying much, but this is a market that's evolving. I would say that what we saw in Q4 is not a flash in the pan. It's real growth, not driven by any individual special factor. I think we'll continue to see solid growth. And as we said previously, I think when you look at the margins, I think what we're seeing is exactly what we talked about it. as soon as we get over a certain amount of revenue, you know, you look at it, anything about $25 million, we saw that both in Q2 and in Q4, we start getting over, if I would call our recurring costs in SG&A and R&D. So, and you know, as I've always said, our products in this market are very profitable on a gross margin level. So what you get is a disproportionate amount dropping to the bottom line. And I've always said that if we're in this market, you know, we're going to get the margins that are not dilutive to the rest of CAE. And you saw that in this quarter. So look, I think we're going to see more of this, but it's a small business at the moment. It's hard for me to predict it more than I have just in the statement I just made. There's a lot of irons in the fire. I'm very encouraged by not only the revenue that we've gotten, but even more to the point, the traction we're starting to get with some societies that are really, you know, starting to, you know, think hard about, you know, introducing simulation and simulation-based training as the means of initial and recurrent certification of practitioners. And we've always said that would blow the cover off the ball on this market. So in the meantime, we established a solid leadership position, and I think we're growing top and bottom line. That's what we expect to continue to do.
Great. Good luck with that. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.
Operator, since we only have a few minutes left to the hour, I think we'll conclude the Q&A session with investors at this point and open the line to members of the media.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, members of the media, if you would like to register a question, you may press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been asked by another and you would like to withdraw your registration, you may press the 1 followed by the 3. Once again, to register a question, it's the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad.
All right, operator, if there are no questions from members of the media, we will...
We do have one question. Yeah. We have
Sorry
a question
about that.
From the line of Julien Arsenault with the Canadian Press. Please proceed.
Oui, bonjour, Monsieur Parent. Écoutez, je vous écoutais sur le secteur militaire. Bon, je vois que la croissance, il y a un peu de croissance, mais ça demeure quand même assez stable. Est-ce que vous pensez être capable de passer au travers cette croissance, disons, plus faible sans avoir à ajuster votre nombre d'employés dans vos activités de défense?
Écoutez, quand je regarde la croissance, premièrement, moi, ce que je suis très encouragé, c'est qu'on a eu de la croissance dans le militaire. C'était au-delà de nos attentes. On s'attendait, et ça a été nos projections dans les deux dernières années, d'avoir une situation stable, j'avais dit en résilience, c'est-à-dire qu'on pensait essentiellement avoir une croissance essentiellement stable, donc pas de croissance. Donc le fait qu'on ait eu de la croissance, pour moi, m'encourage beaucoup. Donc, le fait qu'on a eu dans le dernier quart, dans le Q4, on a eu des commandes qui sont au-delà de nos revenus. Donc, ça assure de la croissance dans le futur. Donc, moi, je suis encouragé de la croissance dans le militaire. Puis, pour la question à l'échelle de CAE, écoute, il y a une chose que je sais depuis 30 ans, au-delà de 30 ans de faire des affaires, c'est que le niveau d'emploi est toujours... Ce qui détermine ça, c'est le montant de commandes. Donc, on doit continuer à innover, on doit continuer à améliorer tout le temps notre structure de coûts, notre habilité à compétitionner dans nos marchés qui sont mondiaux pour assurer non seulement notre niveau d'emploi qu'on a en ce moment, mais aussi de le croître dans le futur.
OK. Si je peux me permettre, que du côté de la vente de la division minière, où on en est, comment ça se déroule?
Bien, écoute, je vous demandais, mon gars de finance va parler, Stéphane Lefebvre va répondre à cette question-là.
Oui, OK. Et ma réponse est relativement brève parce que, bien, évidemment, c'est une transaction sur laquelle on travaille très activement, mais c'est difficile de commenter à ce stade-ci sur les et le timing et les valeurs. Je sais qu'il y a beaucoup de gens qui aimeraient avoir plus de détails, là, mais malheureusement, c'est quelque chose sur lequel on travaille très activement. Alors, à des fins de confidentialité, malheureusement,
on ne pourra pas donner plus de détails à ce stade-ci.
La chose que je peux dire, par exemple, pour renchérir sur la question, c'est que, comme on a toujours dit, nous, c'est pas une vente de feu, on a des, c'est une business qui génère des profits. On est des emplois, puis nous, on veut s'assurer qu'on ait une transaction qui soit fidèle à la valeur de la compagnie et aussi qui soit bonne pour nos employés.
OK. Parce que je me souviens, j'étais là à l'Assemblée des actionnaires quand vous avez annoncé dans la révision stratégique. On s'attendait à ce que ça soit complété dans l'exercice financier. Là, on l'a dépassé un peu. Vous disiez, M. Parent, que c'est pas une vente de feu. Donc, de ce que je comprends, c'est que ça prendra le temps que ça prendra pour vous. C'est pas plus grave que ça?
Ben écoutez, c'est sûr qu'on veut pas éterniser parce que quand on met quelque chose à vendre, c'est parce qu'on a l'intention de le vendre, mais je pense qu'on peut dire que ça a duré plus longtemps que je m'attendais à ce moment-là, mais peut-être quand on dit que c'est pas une vente de feu, mais c'est ça qui arrive.
OK. Mais il y a des ça génère de l'intérêt quand même?
Oui, sans aucun doute.
Oui.
Parfait. Merci.
Merci.
Okay, operator, I think that's all the time we have. We'll conclude today's call. I wish to thank all the members of the media and the investment community for their participation on the call this afternoon and for their questions. I would like to remind all participants that a copy of today's call can be found as a transcript on CAE's website at cae.com. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.